authenticity is recognizable. I think it's really scary to say, like, we're going to strip away these traditional ideas of branding, and you think that you're just going to get lost in the sea of things. But the way I think about it is, when you get up every day to get dressed, you're not, from day to day, you are not wildly putting on something that looks aesthetically different from the day before. Like, you have a style already that's inherent part of you. And running a business is the same way. If we turn more towards trusting how things feel when we make them, and if they feel good and they feel authentic and they feel like the thing we want to give to people, those things string together day by day by day, create a brand, you know, by definition.
Welcome back to the Tool for This Shit podcast. I'm your host, Angie Sorensen. Welcome, welcome, welcome. I'm so glad to have you here. If you're new, this is an interview-based podcast where you'll find a wide range of topics and guests, just because I guess I'm just curious about a lot of different topics. So you'll find guests like doctors, sex workers, women who escaped Christian cults, scientists, lawyers, psychotherapists, coaches, divorce lawyers, and so many more. This is the end of this season, so I will take a little break before recording the next one. If you want to be kept in the loop as to when the new season goes live and receive some exclusive behind-the-scenes insight that I've only been sharing with my email list, I've included a link onto where to sign up into the show notes. So today I'm welcoming back a previous guest, Amanda Filippelli, who came on the podcast. Her episode was episode 61 in May 2021, and it was called You Don't Need the Approval. So this is going back quite a bit. A lot has happened since. And Amanda at the time, and she's going to now introduce herself, obviously, in her own words. By the time, she was a book coach, an editor, a writer, and a recipient of the Pittsburgh Magazine's 40 Under 40 Award. Amanda built a really successful business, and she's recently decided to step away from the traditional idea of branding, letting go of color palettes, logos, and all the rules that comes with it. And so she's here to share her insights on why she feels being our true unfiltered selves might be the key to building real trust, both in business and in life. Now, I may have butchered this. She may, you know, correct me when we get on. But first of all, I just want to give a big, big warm welcome, because Amanda is, you're someone who I actually really remember having a really good conversation. I was like, you had such insights, and at the same time we were laughing as well. There was like a few giggles in the whilst we were recording, and I always appreciated that time, and I always remember you really warmly. So first off, I just want to say thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be back and to talk with you. And no, you didn't butcher it at all. You got it exactly right. So that was perfect. I'm really happy to be here with you in the new year.
Perfect. Yeah, same. Yeah. Happy New Year. We're recording on the, well, on the 3rd of Jan, but it's not going to come out till about March. So it's going to feel weird when it comes out. But this is where we're at now, 3rd of Jan. And so right before we talk about why you decided to step away from traditional branding after 10 years in business, is there, do you have any sort of like update as to what you do? Like the whole intro I gave you, do you feel like, is it the same? Has anything changed?
So it's mostly the same, but I'm in the process of things changing. So yesterday was like my big full-time return to work. And I'm coming back still as a book coach, as an editor, as a guide. I still do the authorpreneur program, where I take a small number of authors every year and help teach them how to work through their novels or their nonfiction books, their manuscripts, their memoirs. And shepherd them down the path of publishing. So I still do all of that. I still do workshops. The last time I spoke to you, we had just wrapped up our last conference, which is actually the last one we had, you know, right before kind of my life completely changed. And so I'm hoping to get back to that. But adding to those things now, my focus has really become, after 10 years of helping other people realize and actualize their creative goals, is turning that focus on myself. I have a lot of, like most entrepreneurs and specifically most women entrepreneurs, I have a lot of creative projects that have always sat on the back burner. And I've given a lot of my time and my expertise to the success of other people, and which I don't regret at all. But now my focus has really turned to being able to bring those projects to the forefront, and not when they feel like, oh my God, I have to just do this, I have to get it out, because that has happened over the years. I just want to be more consistent in that way and provide a platform where creatives can come and do the same thing too. So we're in the process of creating a production company and I say reintroducing a publishing press, just because I used to co-own a publishing press years ago, but I've always wanted to bring it back to life. And this is the year that's finally going to happen. So there's a lot of really, really exciting things to come.
What's a publishing press?
So where people who are looking for representation can come and have their books published through us. But ours has a little bit of a different twist in that its parent company will be a production company. So it will help people who want to take what they've written on the page and create like an accentuating experience for that. Much in the way that if you're familiar with my work, like I've done with both of my books, one was adapted for the stage and the other one was turned into an interactive art installation. And so I want to give the public the opportunity to try those, to do those things too.
And it's also like a fun way for the artist as well to see the creation in different expressions, right? Like not like there's like pen to paper, but then there's also like the whole like more three-dimensional, four-dimensional, how you'd call it, way of expressing the message or the art, right? So yeah, so that's exciting. That's really, really exciting. Did you want to you don't have to, I can delete this from the final thing, but did you want to share like what, because you mentioned that a lot of things had that you said your life changed completely. Is that something you'd be open to share, or would you rather we don't have to?
No, I can share, and I think it has a lot to do with like the branding conversation. You want me to just jump into that, tell you something about it?
It's totally up to you. Like I don't want to force it.
So a month after our last episode was released, my father passed away unexpectedly. And then 2 weeks after that, I found out I was pregnant. So life just really happened to me really, really quickly. And I went on a pretty introspective, intensive journey, sort of publicly after my son was born, where I really tried to grapple with what did it mean to embrace and go through one of the greatest griefs of my life, and also embrace and be present for one of the greatest joys of my life. And how do I marry those things together without having any kind of negative impact on my son? And that turned into the Remembering Room, which first was a book of poetry I wrote about losing my dad and having my son, but then also became an interactive art installation that people could go experience and process through their own grief. After that year, I started to feel a shift inside in my business. Like, I still loved what I did. I still love what I do. I mean, I'm so grateful to be able to work on my passion every day and help people. But I definitely felt like a different calling. Like, I felt like, in a lot of ways, while I was creating that exhibit, I felt that sense of exhilaration creatives get when they're working on something that's just like so fulfilling to them, and realize that maybe I wasn't paying enough attention to not only just my creative needs and what fulfills me, but structuring or continuing to evolve my business in such a way that was fulfilling for me and my clients. Because I think what happens when you have a business long term is you just kind of fall into that sort of like day-to-day structure. Like, you stop growing at some point, once things get to a point where you're comfortable. And that's what really had happened for me.
It's like you box yourself in into the yes.
And then you feel bad because you're like, I don't feel happy doing this the way that I used to feel happy doing this. And like, what's the point of owning a business if I don't feel happy running it? I tried hiring people. I tried different like program shifts. I was just doing like little tweaks here and there, and everything just kind of made it worse. It just kept getting like worse and worse inside. So then I decided to take on just five people, and really take a step back and just do part time and try and be like a stay at home mom plus part time in my business. And in that process, like, well, first of all, having kids teaches you everything you ever need to know about yourself. It just expresses all of your limits to the extreme, right? And that helped me realize where I still needed to do some work and some learning on myself. Like we always do, right? It's never ending. But in this case, I realized that one, creativity for me is a spiritual practice. And that's the thing that's missing. You know, I think when I went through kind of the spiritual grief you go through in losing a person, I didn't know where to turn or what to do, you know. I didn't have like a church to attend until I realized that like that church is housed within myself. And when the creation process of the art installation was over, I felt really alone again, where I expected to feel like I had exercised all of these things that I needed to feel, and that, like, okay, I figured it out, let me move on. But that's not how life works. Like, it doesn't, you don't just get to kind of compartmentalize your feelings and then like move on from them. So it really developed this sort of idea of, for some people, mainly myself, what I discovered is that like creativity is a spiritual practice for me. It is a place that I can call home and find answers and grow myself. And it's a place that I need to visit every day. And that's what I wasn't doing. That's what I was missing. And that discussion with myself spurred a lot of action. I started writing a new book about the topic. I finally invested in myself in bigger ways and joined some coaching programs. I got a business coach. I got a book coach for myself. I just started doing more things that forced me to say, like, okay, you literally have to schedule time into your day for yourself, or you're just wasting money at this point. What was happening is I was lending all of my creativity out. And so my brain really spent its whole day just rolling around other people's projects, which I love, which is great, but I wasn't actively saving any time, space, energy, creative bandwidth for myself. You know, it was always like, I'll get to it when I have a break. And that's just one type of burnout. You know, I've been through all of them. I feel like this is like the five stages of burnout. Well, here's the last one. Okay, this is the last way I can learn how to burn out. And it brought me back to, you know, and the irony of it is that I do, like, when I do speaking engagements, I speak a lot about authenticity and the importance of daily creativity. And I sit here on Zoom calls and I coach people to have daily rituals for their creativity. Like, I know the formula and I know it lives within inside of me. But I got away from the practice, deeply got away from the practice. And unfortunately, it took a lot of upheaval in my life to make me realize that. And that's where I really started to think much more deeply about authenticity in terms of my daily living, in terms of what that looks like in my business, and what that looks like in my own creativity, and what that looks like in the way that I coach other people.
I can see how like that's, I mean, a lot of what you're saying like makes so much sense, you know. It's like it, because it's also it's a lot harder. It's simple, but it's actually harder to put into practice to make sure that not just to be authentic, but to feel that you are being authentic. So I think sometimes, and maybe that's what I'm hearing from you, but correct me if I'm wrong, but I think like we may also have a completely different standard in a standard in our head as to what actually looks authentic. And we may actually be authentic enough in daily life, you know, doing the things and in what we're doing, what we're saying. But I think sometimes, especially if you are used to do something, let's say it's like a business, a day job, or whatever it is that you're doing, you sort of get into that rhythm and doing the things, the movement, you're just like a robot almost, right? And so all of a sudden you realize something's not quite right. And you were saying something. About, you know, you knew cognitively, knew all the things, you know, you're teaching, you're coaching, you're doing speeches, right? But it's like that old analogy, right? You know, you can be like the best doctor in the world and not doing what's right for you, right? As well. Like, you know what you're supposed to do, but it's a different thing to actually put the time for yourself and actually prioritize that, right? And you were mentioning about that creativity being a spiritual process. I always feel like creativity is like, I mean, you can use people, and I say divine inspiration or inspiration from above, and you can replace that by any other word, right? It doesn't have to be that word. You can use by any other word you feel is like, to use like that sort of like higher self or universe or anything like that, right? That feels, it almost feels like it's given, and it's almost like, it's not just an inspiration, but it's also something that feeds you, right? Something that feeds me. You know, when I'm doing something that I'm excited about, it gives me energy, you know? I mean, I may be a little bit tired after, like sweaty armpits and just feeling a bit, I need a different t-shirt, you know? sometimes after some interviews, like I feel like, I'm like, oh, I feel like my body has been sweating. Like, is, you know, it's just some sort of, like it's a response. But I was really in the zone. But I still feel energized. It's just sort of, it's a different place than doing something just because you have to do it.
Yeah, and I love that feeling. Mm-hmm. I have a real like addiction to that feeling. But I think you have to feel worthy of what you feel like you're being given in that spiritual creative process. Yeah. And so there's a real cognitive dissonance that happened with me, because I know what my talents are. I know that I have a keen eye for editing and story structure and, you know, poetic lyricism and things like that, like the things that people need help with when they want to communicate their story. Like I know that I have what they need. And I think subconsciously that I felt good enough to lend that out to other people in its full capacity, which is what, you know, I'm proud of that having made my business successful. But did I feel like I was worthy enough to harness those gifts for myself,
mm-hmm.
to infuse them in my own work, to share that, to risk failure? Maybe not. And it feels really good now to face that head on, because the reward in facing that head on is that I'm forcing myself to get more and more comfortable with the idea that, like, I still own those gifts. They're not just to be given away. They're to be utilized by myself too. And if I can accept that and feel worthy of that, I can experience that feeling that you're talking about, you know, that energizing feeling on a daily basis. It's available to me. You know, one of the things I told my coach was just that I used to, so when my husband and I love to travel, and when we do, I get this, we like to camper van and backpack and hike, mm-hmm. and things like that, because I love the feeling of being close to the land in a new place, being close to the native people there, just smelling the air there, the food, just that kind of buzzing experience that you get from, you can feel yourself kind of dissipate from the day-to-day mundanity that you're used to and be immersed in something so much deeper, right? That's what creativity feels like to me. That's kind of the feeling that I'm chasing. But I think it just took me all of this to realize, like, I can harness that feeling at my desk.
Yes.
And I didn't think that was possible before.
Mm. Yeah. But no, and also, like, you know, thanks for sharing. I had followed and I knew what had happened, you know, back then. And so it's obviously, it's a lot, it's sort of like contrasting life experiences, right? So it makes a lot of sense that you obviously rethinking and try a different thing and try to find a place where you can actually feel that feeling, that home thing maybe. And I think also how anyone copes in those situations, you know, of having that dichotomy of life and death. I think just the death is really intense already, you know, or just having a new life coming into your life is super intense. I don't have that experience of the new life, but the death, yeah, then that's very, very intense. Yeah, really, really intense. So thank you so much. And I guess, like, it sort of makes sense that you're rethinking about the box, right? Just want to return back to, like, feeling like boxed in, you know. You're saying, like, you know, you keep doing the things in your business that you're used to, and you're sort of starting to question it. Am I being assumptive to say, like, that was almost like the what happened in the last couple of years, 3 years, is that the why that made you decide to step away from traditional branding after being in business for 10 years?
Yeah, I think I had a moment after my daughter was born that I wanted to step away longer from work, and I wanted to reevaluate everything and invest in this time in myself. And one of the conclusions I came to while I was doing that work was my team and I were talking about rebranding the website and building a new site for, you know, we're building like a school for writers, and where we can launch these workshops and these courses, and talking about social media, because anybody who like follows me at all knows that I rarely use social media. It's just not, I don't love it. But there's been a lot of times throughout the years where people have tried to kind of coach me into like getting on a calendar and a schedule, and
I know.
And like you could be growing more, and I don't know. No, thanks. But that led to a bigger conversation of like one of my, somebody on my team was like, what do you want?
Yeah.
And it took me back for a minute because I had to think about it. and I said, I don't think I want to define what I want. Like, as a creative person running a creative business, I want that to be the brand. Like, I want that to be the face. Like, I think that we're getting to, like, nobody cares whether my website is this shade of royal blue or, you know, rustic orange. Nobody gives a shit. Like, I just, they care about what I can bring to them. They care about how I can affect their heart. They care about what I can do for their project. They care about connection. Mm-hmm. That's what it is, right? It's connection. And I cannot continue to try and create connection with people inside this boxing of branding. And I think too that like it's held us all back as entrepreneurs. Like, I think that a lot of people think the first step to building their business, I see it all the time with clients with their books, is like, okay, the first step to building this platform is like, let me get a logo, let me get a color palette, let me get fonts and a structure. And it's just like, is that what's important? Is that the thing people care about?
Do you know what? But this is so interesting because this is such, I feel like it's such a, I wouldn't say deep programming, but it's what I would call like some sort of programming, because I get it. I've been there, and even like I've spent money on like the logo, the this, the that, like, you know, years ago I used to do that a lot. And even now I love design. I love things. I have a particular taste in, you know, I like things to look a certain way, you know. I did the designs myself on Canva, but like then I get someone else to put it on the website. And I did have help before by someone who was super creative, and she showed me some stuff and she helped me set that. And then I just do the rest, right? But I love that. I love that side. But I also know that, like, I hear when I have friends who are starting out, they want to do a new project. I've got a friend who wants to do a book. What do you think she's spending time on? Oh, there's this software I bought to do these like graphics to illustrate for the book. And I'm like, write the book. I don't say it that way, but I almost also, I know where she's coming from with it. She's like, and then the colors and the logo. And I get it, because it's one way of engaging with your, that creative calling that you have somewhere, you know, you had that desire has been planted by your soul or from, or wherever it is that you want to, however you want to word it, right? But it's been, that seed has been planted, and it's really hard to know what to do first. Like, are you watering? Do you need the sun? Do you need to find the perfect patch? Is it the soil? What do we do? Like, do I put like some green grass around it, or do we not? Like, what do we do? And it's very, but it is kind of what we are being told online. Like, I think, you know, we're being told like, and the logo, and get the logo, and get the this, and you have to be recognizable. And there's some truth to it, but there is a lot of time wasted and a lot of money wasted. And like you said, it's holding small entrepreneurs back, because just do the thing. But the just mm-hmm. to do the thing is so scary. Even I am scared at times, right?
But here's the lie that's being told in that branding. Well, first of all, I'm not a graphic designer. And I don't want to be a graphic designer. And I spent a lot of years being a graphic designer in my business because I felt like that's what it needed. Now, when I need something like a cover or a website or a landing page or whatever it is, I go to my graphic designer and I say, here's my ideas. And then I tell them, do what you think is best. And I trust their creative process. And it changes the vision that I had for it, but it creates something more beautiful than I ever envisioned, because I'm allowing our processes to work together and I'm trusting another creative. And a lot of times, like when we feel like we need to brand our business, we don't do that, right? We try to hold tight control over what it should look like, because our branding is so deeply intertwined with our personal feelings about who we are, as like who we're representing as ourselves. Mm-hmm. Like, I think people use branding as an extension of who they are, as who they're presenting themselves to as the public. And that's a mistake, because your business has very little to do with you and your public face. Your business has everything to do with how it makes your potential client feel. And that's like a marketing thing, right? That's something we need to understand as small business owners, that I'm not trying to impress somebody with like how cool I look. I'm trying to impress somebody with how I can enhance their life. And so when you switch that mindset and you realize that if I'm trying to show somebody how I can come in and give them something they feel like they're missing, that doesn't have anything to do with what I look like to them or with what color palette I chose. I like to think of branding now more specific from project to project. Like, if I'm building something for myself or another person, I am building it with that project's needs in mind and letting that grow and cultivate, and I'm enriching that soil with its specific needs. Every project is its own plant now, instead of saying all of these things have to fit under a single umbrella that is Amanda Filippelli branding.
But so if I was just to flip the script a little bit, don't you think that, because obviously I agree, like, is how what you are bringing to them, like what is the business actually doing for them? Because they when someone visits your website, they're not going, I want to meet someone like who has to like look cool and be cool. They're just going like, what, and so what, like, what is it bringing to me? Like, is it going to help me get what I want, what I need, the next step? So don't you think there should still be some sort of like a cohesiveness, something like a professional look, something that, you know, you don't want to look like you just stepped out of bed and not give a shit about how things are presented, right? Like, what is it, like, what do you mean by like, not caring about the palette, the logo, the branding? Is everything just like whatever? Or because you have a designer, right? So there's still a care for it. So can you just sort of clarify what you mean?
So I still think there should be a cohesion if you're talking about specifically like your website, right? We have multiple sites and they all look different because they all are quote unquote branded toward what they're offering, mm-hmm. instead yes. of it all being under one big umbrella of branding. Like, I want the freedom to be able to say, I'm creating a new product or a new service, and it looks like this in my head. Instead of what we used to do is saying like, okay, I'm going to release a new service and it's going to, the headers are going to look like this and the body's going to have this color. I want everything to have its own creative identity. So I'm not saying that like branding is the devil. Like, branding is an innate thing that happens in your business. It's just that we get so caught up in, like, I have to be consistent, I have to be consistent, I have to be consistent so people recognize it. But that's not necessarily true. And then all of that bleeds over into social media in like the most toxic way possible. Like, I just am not interested in having people create posts for me, branded posts for me that I'm putting out on a schedule. Like, if I want to take a picture and say some words about it, like, I just want to be like, I'm just going to do that. And if I don't want to do that, I'm not going to do that. Because how can anybody find me and feel any sort of connection to me whatsoever if everything I'm making is going through this sort of like branded filter first? And that's what I'm eliminating. I'm eliminating that branding filter. Like, if I think today something I post or a website I'm making or a service I'm putting out or a workbook needs to look like A, and next week I'm making a new one and it looks like B, just totally separate, fine. It's the connecting thread between the two is that because it's coming from me, it's always going to look and feel like me.
Like the wording, the sentiment, the
Even the design, like, without, if you are always doing the work to find and bring forth your authenticity in your day-to-day life and your day-to-day work, no matter, everything you create is going to feel like you. It's when we start to feel like we need to change who we are and what we represent that our branding starts to get erratic.
Is it sort of like, do you mean like, for example, so let's say you have, because you were trying to think of like, because obviously like each project can have like, they have like their own identity, their own, because they each have a different purpose or, a reason for being. But when you say like they don't all have to be under the Amanda Filippelli brand, what I hear from that is like, it, for example, if the branding of Amanda that people had, that you had agreed that it has to be that blue, that particular yellow, that white, and that black, and then the font is, that font is Oswald, and then after that we can have a smaller font, and then and all the fonts have to stay the same. We're not gonna waver, right? Because that's what branding is, right? It's like a traditional way, right? And so what you're saying is like, so let's say your main website could have that, and you really love it, but you have a project A. You can you're not gonna care if it's got the same blue, the same yellow, the same is what you're saying, right? And then it can have its own identity, like they use the word they use, right? It has its own little feel to it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I think the same just goes, like, when you create something personally, no matter what that is, whatever that project is, every project you create does not feel the same. And so the way it presents to the world shouldn't feel the same, I just think we're stunting ourselves from being able to creatively evolve and grow and change. Like, people are so afraid of like a brand changing. It's like, if it's not consistent, I don't trust it. Well, why not? If it's consistent forever, I don't trust it. Because what is it learning? What is it? How is it growing? How is that business adapting and bringing new things to the table?
No, that makes sense. But I think it's so you know how you mentioned about how that, that I think you said like it's a lie that having like a consistency in the branding builds trust. You say it's a lie. Is it because like it doesn't feel like the brand is evolving? Is that what you mean? Or
I think it's an over, oh, okay, maybe lie was a harsh word, but I think it's an over, it's just it's an overstatement to say that, like, the only way clients are going to trust you is if you're consistent. Like, yes, I think that it doesn't leave room for you to grow or change. It makes you feel boxed in as the service provider. It makes you feel like you can't, if you have kind of ideas outside of that branding box, it makes you feel like you can't present them. And so that limits your growth. That limits what you're offering to people. But I also think that, like, people are sick of companies all trying to compete with each other through branding, because in a lot of ways, I can argue, like, it's products have become about what they look like and not about quality. Now we're just looking for consistent branding over quality. I mean, I've bought a lot of things that, like, appealed, their branding appealed to me, and then like aesthetically, and then I buy it and I'm like, this is kind of garbage or like way
Yeah.
overpriced. And that happens a lot now.
Especially with Instagram, right? When they, I mean, every time, like, I'm not buying a product I've seen on Instagram ever again. And then what am I doing? Like, I bought, and I haven't, it hasn't happened a lot, but like, whenever I've either gone to a service provider that I've seen on Instagram and they were not like they were in the same city as me, or like a product that was like, oh, that looks really great. Oh, look at all these reviews. I have never been like, oh my God, thank God I saw that. I'm so happy I went to that service provider. I'm so happy I bought that product. Never, never. And it's also because it's presenting in a certain way that is actually misleading. Or maybe I'm not reading between the lines right. But now I'm like, I'm just keeping to what I know now. I'm like, why am I bothering with like new products anyway that I haven't even been recommended personally? So yeah, it's I think also like I think like because what I'm hearing is also is about allowing changes, right? It's about because I think for some, I mean, I'm thinking of like how, for example, how my brain works. For example, I like to know that I don't have to make one more decision because I feel like I'm like a lot of other people in my age group. There's that decision fatigue, right? So for me, the fact that there is some sort of there is a branding in place, I know that when I have to do and I have to promote an episode or this and that, I don't have to reinvent the wheel because for me, it's very time and energy consuming to do those things. I really enjoy doing designs. I actually really enjoy it, but I'm not a designer, but I enjoy it. But I also enjoy knowing that once I've decided, I can just re rinse and repeat because it's until I'm bored of it, and then I will then change it. But or ask someone to do it for me, to change it for me. But there's this part of me that's also like, whew, okay, one less decision, right? But I also understand that it's true. Like if I felt like, oh, I feel like now this, I had like a feeling I wanted to do something different. I wouldn't want to feel boxed in, especially when it is my little venture. Why can I not decide for myself, right?
Well, I think I need to make like a really important distinction here is that between branding and structure, some branding is just business structure and can be your friend. And if it feels good, do it. You know, like I agree with you. You know, if you are creating a service or a product that you have the structure built for it and you can just put it into that container every week and deliver it, and that there's no decision making in that. That's great. That's how you create kind of more passive streams of income. That makes sense. So I'm not saying that structures are bad or that even branded structures are bad at all. What I'm saying is that when we think about bigger business, that branding in today's age has become predatory in some ways. In that, so for example, like every like twice a year, we do a competitive analysis where we look at all of the other businesses that do the same thing that we do. And what are they doing differently? What are they doing the same? What does their branding look like? You know, it's just this huge, okay. And what always gets me is a lot of these other businesses are, you can see that they're working towards creating a persona that will be inviting to you, like to their customers, right? Which I, you know, on surface level makes sense, but that means that we're creating a lot of inauthentic content. We're trying to battle with one another. We're competing, right? Instead of ever coming together and working together. Like what I hate about branding is the competition. And if my platform starts to look super similar or in competition with other platforms, it's just a sign to me that I'm not being honest with who I am and what it means, what my services mean to put out. Like, as a creative person, as a person who deals with people's works of passion, I want them to know that they're coming to a space where I am always going to be transparent with you. I'm always going to be honest with you. I'm always going to be completely upfront with you. Like, that's the important piece of my brand. Because that's an important piece of who I bring to the table as a professional, but also just as a person, as a friend. So I get put off by other people who do the same thing as me, who are just like kind of clamoring to look better than each other. And like we said, like you see that in a lot of products. Like, you know, these brands are spending millions and millions of dollars in marketed branding just to pull numbers, just to pull acquisition numbers so that you're buying their products off Instagram ads. It doesn't matter what the quality is, right? So my point is that throwing away traditional branding and that whatever your branding looks like, if you are first focusing on authentic quality, great. But I think a lot of times, especially new entrepreneurs, look at branding as a way to just kind of throw their net out and bring in as many fish in the pool as they can. And I'm not sure that that's the most productive, heart-centered, healthy, authentic way to do business anymore.
Yeah, and there's a lot of things out there where you like things are looking super glossy, looking really good, and then you may sign up to something with them, whether it's paid or free, and you kind of like go, is that it? That you seem to be making such a big fuss about the whole thing. Is that I felt like almost like I was gonna get like a Birkin with it, you know, and it's like, and I got like a really cheap beer. I'm not sure how I feel about it, but and that's I think that's why probably like, or maybe it's expectations, I don't know, but I think that's why obviously people can like really, you know, shoot themselves in the foot. So I guess like the question I would ask is like, how can small businesses balance the need for recognizability? You know, being able to be recognized without sacrificing being authentic. Because obviously, there's also, especially when you start off, you want to make sure someone remembers you the next time they see you in their feed or something, or when you send them an email, although email is a bit different. How would you say so? Especially because when you start off, you may not want to change too much, right? Even though you may not be sure what you stand for just yet. But how would you balance that?
I think authenticity is recognizable. I think it's really scary to say, like, we're going to strip away these traditional ideas of branding, and you think that you're just going to get lost in the sea of things. But the way I think about it is when you get up every day to get dressed, you're not, from day to day, you are not wildly putting on something that looks aesthetically different from the day before. Like, you have a style already that's inherent part of you. And running a business is the same way. If we turn more towards trusting how things feel when we make them, and if they feel good and they feel authentic and they feel like the thing we want to give to people, those things string together day by day by day, create a brand, you know, by definition. And that brand is then becomes one of authenticity. So I think I'm not saying we shouldn't have branding, obviously. You just like it's a part of life. Like you literally brand yourself every day when you get ready. All I'm saying is that we need to trust that we know already inside what that is, what that looks like, and also not tether ourselves down to these anchors we've decided on in our branding. And I think there's so much value in what you said about we tend to invest in things that look really good and then not get a lot of value out of them. And just collectively trying to recognize that and maybe rework how we view businesses and how we shop, because we're passing over a lot of small businesses that would bring you tons of value, because they don't have $1 million to throw into marketing and into algorithms. I want to be part of that movement
No,
instead.
I agree. And I think like, oh yeah, so much good stuff in what you're saying, Amanda. And I think like there's two things I just thought of, and I wrote down one. Hopefully I'll remember the other one. Wait, let me just write it down because I'm gonna forget. So the first one, you know, when I hear you speak, like this is like that. It's almost like a little tagline that came up, but it's like, keep it simple, keep yourself free. You know, don't tether yourself down to something that, oh, it's like a sentence or a long-term commitment, right? And I think it's also it's the same for people like when they start a podcast. A lot of people are thinking about, and I sometimes struggle with this too, and I'll circle to this in a second, but they overthink. They're like, oh, you know, everything has to be ready, and all of these like ideas and how it's gonna look, and they have all these ideas, and it's like you just have to actually start. It's good to have ideas written down, and there are loads of tools and methods into how you can come up with like ideas and how you can keep like, you know, milking them almost, you know, and find new things. But the reality is that things will change. Like when I started it, I've changed as well a lot on the topics, you know, and it's a lot of it is also just an expression of who I am. You know, I think people may think, oh, you know, she doesn't commit to one topic or whatever. I don't care. Not that people say that, but like I don't, you know, some people are really good at niching down, you know, like you have people like Andrew Gold or the guy from Modern Wisdom or Girls Gotta Read. All these people, they're like really good at talking about one top, like they do change, but overall, a lot of it is like on the same amount of topic, and they just really drill down, and they keep it fresh and interesting, right? But for me, it's like I don't have that kind of, I maybe attention, I don't know, but also like I would get bored. I'd like to change it up. I like to meet new people, new topics, new conversations. That's what really gets me going, you know? And about the branding, is, you know, now it's all about when the last year or two, you know, video podcasts, right? People look like they have all this thing on video. And for me, I really love audio. And today is one of the exceptions where we're recording with the video, because even when I record, I don't even put the video on, right? I really like it, really helps my brain to just do it that way. But it's like everyone now, a lot of people feel like they have to do video podcast. And I'm like, for me, that's it's a whole like the conversation in the sense that I don't even think that is podcast. It's a video. It's very different, right? We just don't have the language for it yet. But it's, and you know, there was a point where I was like, oh, you know, people were saying you should do video, you know, the reach, the blah blah blah. And I'm like, no, like I've gone through. Sometimes I've had to think about it, and maybe one day I will if it feels right for me, and then I will. But for me, the reason why I got into it is the audio, because there is no video. It's very freeing for me, and it's that intimacy that I feel when I do the audio. Even with the video off, it sounds really contradicting, but it really is like a very particular space I get into, a very particular zone. And that's how I feel. And I guess it's like, you know, there's a lot of push towards video, you know. But again, people are not seeing that there's almost like this other side to it where YouTube and Spotify were kind of battling together of who's going to get the most people. So it's all about aggregation, acquisition, retention of the audience. It's got nothing to do with the experience of what they think people would really enjoy in a podcast, you know. So, and there's also other things going on at play as well, right? But and there's also a bias about between men and women. You know, women, we have to be on, and guys just show up as is. You know, I mean, Joe Rogan doesn't put on makeup, I think. He doesn't need to, right? But Alex Cooper, you know, she has to be like, you know, she's set, right? She's like, there's a big difference. So, and it may not be true in everything, but so I think it's, again, it's about, it feels almost like it all comes into that conversation about the branding and authenticity, and do actually what it is that you want. And not feel that pressure of complying with everybody else. And also understanding that if you change your mind, like you said, like from project to project, you want to make, you'll do the brand that you feel is needed for that. Not feel like you can't change your mind, because that's part of freedom. Freedom is being able to change your mind too, right?
Well, here's a piece of freedom.
You can see that why I don't do video. Oh, I'm so clumsy. Anyway.
I think it is a capitalist farce that small businesses are told they need to create this branded structure to succeed. Because the reality is that the most successful entrepreneurs I know are the ones who take risks on wild ideas that people say, why would you ever do that? And they say, why not? And it's because there's so much fear in going off the grid, off the deep end, doing something people have never thought of doing. But that's where all of your biggest fulfillment, your biggest successes lie. I mean, I think people just know that, but they don't want to know that. And so all of these, everybody who wants to start a business comes to the table and thinks like, okay, well, here's this formula. Well, how many people have that form has that formula been successful for? Like, is that what's making people successful? Is like fitting into this formulaic box that we've been told we should do A, B, and C to create a business? Like, is that what it is? Like, I tell people all the time, like, Beyonce has never written a newsletter. Okay.
Oh yeah.
You really don't need, like, if this is, if
But
that
that's a
is
bit different because
not,
she's got a whole team. Like that's a bit like she's got a whole business behind her. Like
yeah, but when she was,
I'm not a fan, but yeah. Like
no, yeah, but my point
ooh.
being, when she started, she didn't. You know, like everybody who gets started doesn't start the same way. The fact that we're all thinking we need to start the same way is what's holding us back
Oh, it's
because
because
it's
she's got a newsletter now. Is that why people are thinking they have one?
no,
No, okay. I was just checking. She probably
my
has one though.
maybe, but my point is being that like they're. The most successful people you know didn't start out by saying like, well, I better embrace this formula. I better, get a color palette. I better start a newsletter. I better post on social media 10 and 2. I better, like it, none of that ultimately really matters. It's about the ideas that you have, and it's about your willingness to chase those ideas and to do things that are unconventional and to embrace failure and to shift and try new things. That's really the sauce behind the magic sauce behind running a business. It has very little to do with what your actual branding looks like. Yes, consistency is important, but like I said, if you're bringing your whole self to it every day, it's going to inherently be consistent. I just want people to stop focusing so much on like what everything looks like, because I think that they then start to really concern themselves with what they look like and their like what they're putting out there and how they're presenting. And instead of putting like their artwork first.
I mean, yeah, the art first, for sure. For sure. And then finding a way to so that it's being seen, right? But I think like maybe how it's being seen, it's like to me, the way I see like how people are telling us like how to run a successful business, I find that sometimes a lot of them are completely chopping away at a very important premise of how they started or how, there's an example. I'm not going to name the person, but there's an example of someone who actually I really, really admired when she first started out. And I think she's great. I think she's really, really good at what she does. And she has this podcast and he blew up, right? And now what she does is that she's also teaching, and but she doesn't teach just about podcasts. She teaches about all kind of different things. She has a lot of different courses and stuff. But across the thing is that what she does not explain is that, and which is strange because when I first listened to her, I listened to her like from the first few episodes, and in there she mentions that she was already multiple six-figure business. Teaching something else online. She already had contact with big music houses, big production houses. So she didn't start her podcast from scratch. So the reason why she had like 1 million downloads in the first year. So the way that she sells it now is like how to get like, it's a bit like how to get 1 million download in the first year. And I'm like, yeah, if you already have a big following, or maybe you're incredibly like, I'm not saying that it can't happen for someone who starts out and maybe they do something absolutely incredible and I wish that for them. They got the 1 million download if that's what they want and that's great. But it's like that's where the misleading thing about how people teach you how to run a business. And I think that's very, very, I find that quite harmful because you have people who join their program. Those programs aren't cheap, by the way, and you're one in many thousands. Okay. So you don't get the attention anyway. And you pay several thousand for those things. And you're being told a bit of a lie. Because if that person had truly started from scratch and made 1 million download in the first year, you better believe I'd sign up and want to know what on earth is she doing. But the reality is that she is that you see, this is almost the bigger issue for me is that that person is actually extremely good at what she does. She is such an incredible podcaster. She's very, very good. And I really like her because of her authenticity and her rawness when she was telling her story and stuff. Obviously, what she was saying, I don't know if I haven't checked it right, but I believed her. And it's like you completely removing that. And there's nothing wrong with you mentioning that because actually her origin story is incredibly inspiring, which is why I was listening to her a lot, because how she got to where she was, even just that before the podcast, is absolutely outstanding. It is so inspiring. And but the people who now, you know, she came from that point of like, you know, you can from scratch, you know, do this. And I was thinking, you don't know that. You can't say that. That's not what you mm-hmm. did. You know, you worked hard mm-hmm. to get to where you are, but that's not how you got those results. And I find that, and then that's how people go around and do things that doesn't help. I've had people go to a program, come to me after and say, oh, how do you do this? How do you do that? And I'm like, what do you mean? You don't, you know, it's not right.
Yeah. And isn't that like across the board too? Like that kind of marketing of like, look what I did. Here's a course for how you can do it too. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And is that fair? Is that even going to, even if she was being completely truthful and built it from scratch, will her methods be replicable for every else. Single person?
Yeah, yeah. You can of course no. only teach what you know, right? You can't teach something you right. don't know. Mm-hmm. But you can't guarantee results.
Sure.
You can't say, right. like, I can teach you everything that I do, but you're going to have to do it your own way as well. And I can't guarantee mm-hmm. that you're going to get the same. Or you may actually even get better results, right? Because you're going to do it your mm-hmm. own way, add your own flavor, add your own creativity to it. But you just can't guarantee results like that. It's just like, whoa.
No, it's the same way that, like, when I'm coaching somebody writing their book, I can teach them everything I know about how to get that book published, but I can't guarantee they'll get a book deal, you know. But I do see a lot of people who have gotten book deals launch courses of like, I got a six-figure book deal, join my course to learn how you can do it too. And that's really unfair. That's really it's not totally honest marketing for all the reasons that you're saying.
Yeah. Is it because like they're guaranteeing to hear how you can do it too, like how you can get a six-figure mm-hmm. deal? Would the wording be better if like if they were saying, I managed to get like a six-figure deal, I can't guarantee you're going to get six-figure, but I can show you the steps on how to get to that, or how to actually approach publishers, or how to get to X, Y, and Z points? So how would you...
Yeah, it's just so much like every industry, it's just more complicated than that, right? Like you could show people exactly what you did, but what you did is going to need altered and be different for what somebody else needs to do for their work, because their work is different than your work. They're like everything about it needs to be different, like the voice, the way you write your query, like everything about it will be different. Mm-hmm. I think the people that buy those kind of programs are people who just don't have the kind of base knowledge they need for the industry they're trying to enter, whether it's podcasting or publishing or whatever that is. And they would be better served by being taught by somebody in the industry, you know, an industry expert or a coach in some way, instead of kind of one of these programs that are just giving you this surface information without, like you're saying, like the one-on-one attention you need to then take that information and properly utilize it and apply it to yourself.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, you always need guidance. You always need guidance, mm-hmm. yeah. And I want to try and do that for my own membership too, just because that's where the value is. It's actually doing yep. that, you know, you could get the basics, know the age. Like, there's some things that are the same for everybody, you know, like here's how mm-hmm. this microphone works. Here's how you know how to, you know, different things. But there's a lot of other things that like dependent on you and your environment and what you want to do creatively, right? So, and that's what mm-hmm. you can't do a course on, because otherwise you'll never end that course. It'll be a 10-year course. You have to yeah. do it. So I guess like what I wanted to sort of like round off on is like more on the personal side, right? Because I want to look at like the broader implication of this idea, including how people often feel the need to create a brand on their personal social media. Even people who don't have a business, everyone has like a brand now, right? Mm-hmm. And I think how it limits their... How it limits their ability to show up authentically, right? So, I mean, I don't know if that's something that you think about as well, but I wonder if that's sort of like, oh, is it on brand? Like I've heard, I don't know if people still say that, but I wanted this need like from like really young age, like when you grow up with social media, this need of being on brand and have a certain look. Like, do you think like it's gonna have like sort of an effect like on people, like, so psychologically, you know, like to box yourself in like this, like what does that really mean like on a day to day for someone who doesn't even have a business?
I think about this a lot.
Okay.
So I'm an elder millennial, I guess, who grew up without social media. Like Facebook started when I was in college. And I think back to high school and being categorized, you know, into already into like what type of person you are. And almost like, you know, you're getting it's important when you're trying to figure out your identity and you're getting ready and you want to look a certain way and you want people to perceive you a certain way. So we all get that sort of preliminary experience in branding ourselves, even if it doesn't stick. But I think what happens now is that while adolescents are in the throes of that personal identity branding, there that's then coupled with this digital image of themselves. And so the pressure becomes making this person that's showing up to school every day consistent with this person that's showing up on their social media pages every day. And that's an insane, unnatural pressure that we're not like psychologically equipped to deal with. I think that that bleeds over into a lot of creatives who are trying to pursue their passion. So I can really only speak to the publishing world, but one experience that I had that set this off for me while I was on maternity leave was, so I work with a lot of literary agents and I follow a lot of agents and publishers. And one of the bigger agents that I follow, what they post a lot about, like, you know, tips about how to get agents interested, things they read in queries that makes them reject them, whatever. It's just supposed to be like helpful things. But one day they're posting about what agents expect in terms of social media branding from authors. And it just really hit me wrong because you're talking about like everyday people who are going to a 9-to-5, who are coming home, grinding out a novel that they like just feel so passionate about that they need to get out into the world. And then on top of that, you want them to like also employ themselves in a full-time job of creating some kind of platform, which they don't really know how to do, and brand themselves. And the whole post was about like, you should be familiar with like what it would look like. And it was the same thing we're talking about. It was like, what colors and like what, you know, like if I looked at your social media, like what feeling would I get about who you are as a writer and what you're, and I just wanted to scream, like, just read their book. Like, just read their book. Like, it's that, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, just read it. Yeah. I just feel like this age of branding and social, specifically on social media, has created for creatives all of these extra hoops to jump through. Like all of these kind of, it's like identity trials of like, I want to feel good about you before I'll even consider that thing you made, you know? And it's not fair. And it keeps us as people in the industry from being able to discover a lot of really talented people, because I get it. A lot of those people are like, never mind, you know?
Yeah.
And then I also, on the flip side, have a lot of clients who are just stressing about like what their social media looks like, how many followers they have, like, it's too much and it's taking up way too much space. And I did it in the beginning, you know, and what I think back to now specifically is like the first season of fall in my business. Cause I kind of like thrive in that time of the year. And I remember one day I had like a jump of like 700 followers and I had been working so hard on taking these like,
that's a lot.
I also was spending like morning to night, like taking Bookstagrammable photos and like writing, pre-writing content and like just doing so much. And yes, like that jump was a lot, but it's also nothing. It's also not 20,000 followers. It's also not what like industry professionals are looking for. And it's not the experience I was trying to garner to pass on to clients. It did nothing but just show me that like, we're burning people out trying to have them prove themselves ahead of whatever it is that they're offering. And I think psychologically, it is so hugely detrimental.
I mean, I find the whole social media strategy really exhausting. Like, I mean, that's why I don't I think I'm like, I may have 400 something followers on Instagram now. I don't know. So like, really tiny number. And but I'm grateful for each and one of them. I feel like I am, like I think, but I don't, it was a few years ago, I looked at, okay, how can I work on my social media? Because that's always been a thing where I was like, I'm just not a social media person. Again, because it's all about the video and the looks, and that's why I love audio, right? That's why I love podcasts. It's like I don't have to worry about all that stuff. I can just go straight to the topic. And I think one of the things that someone mentioned was like the Gary V technique. And I was like, oh, let me look at that. And I looked at it and it said, and I'd misread it. I thought I had to do like one comment on 10 different things, 10 different posts or different people. Yeah, it's that number thing. And then I was like, just doing that, I was like, this is exhausting. So I have to look at something that I feel like I want to comment on. I have to like actively be looking. How fake is this? I don't know. And then I realized it was like tenfold that to do like 10, like it was just something stupidly insane. So I was like, oh no, fuck that for a laugh. I'm not doing that. And then there's this other thing, like, because obviously, there's also this part of me, like, I feel like I work actually really hard in like, creating like a podcast that I'm proud of, having guests that I really enjoy having on. And then I work really hard in creating this, like I used to have like online course, now I'm creating this membership, and all of those things takes actually time, energy, and love for me, right? And so of course I wanted to come out in front of more people so that I can also get like a bigger reward, so I can also leave the day job, right? So there is, of course, there's also like a need, a benefit to market it, right? And a lot of those things are quite time consuming. Like people don't understand, like it takes a lot. But of course you also have to, if I don't talk about it, who's gonna know about it, right? You have to also market it, right? So it's kind of this like maybe not vicious circle, but it can feel a little bit like you need it. It's like the devil you need a bit, right? But yes, I think, but I don't think you've caught me yet being able to like post every day several times a day and have like, especially if it's like pictures of me when they say do pictures of yourself. I'm like, I get it. You don't want to be like invisible, like no one knows what you look like. But I'm like, it's so difficult for me. I'm like, I just like, yeah, it's like I can't do it if it feels forced. Like what I've put out there is because I want to put it out. And unfortunately, that level of maybe comfort is not enough to actually make waves. Does that make sense? So I kind of have to push myself a bit more and do more on that to reap the fruit of what I sow, whatever the expression is. But to get something out of it as well, something more than just the satisfaction of what I do, but to help getting the word out, right? So it's a tough balance.
Well, I agree. And one, I think we need to respect our own seasons. For me, I will go months quiet on social media, and then I'll come into a season of massive creation about things I want to share, and you'll see me post a couple times a week for a couple weeks, and then I'll
Yes.
disappear. Do it when it feels good. Organically grow and use it the way it feels good. But I think too that we've pigeonholed ourselves. Like people think every client I work with comes to the table thinking like I need social media. But really, there are so many other ways to market your business that don't include social media at all. And people have just completely abandoned considering those things.
Can you name some? Can you name
I mean,
some? Like,
even just like regular just PR, like getting yourself featured,
yeah.
on different kinds of platforms, the news, blogs, articles, literary magazines.
And actually, PR. I mean, I only know of one agency. I need to actually. Yeah, we've been trying to work together for a while now. I'm always like, oh, I don't have time. But actually, like the prices are really good. I think especially because social media now is so big, like they can't be asking the same prices they used to. So actually, the entry price is actually becoming a lot more affordable as well. Yeah, that's true. PR,
And
yeah.
just doing the work that you love to do out in the world is organic marketing. You know, like if you're a person that likes to do speaking engagements, every time you do a speaking engagement, you're connecting with tons of people, and those people are connecting with other people, telling them what, about what they experienced, or workshops, or things like doing your work and then using that work to spread the word about what you do in press features and things like that. I mean, there are a lot of other ways doing events. There are just so many other ways to market your business, and there can be certain ways that like other people aren't even going to think of that are just specific to what you do, like creative ways to market yourself. You know, I think we're just like mentally limiting ourselves to say like, well, it's just social media, so I'm just going to focus on what I'm going to create there. But like, there are other ways to create buzz for yourself
Yeah.
that
There's
a lot of
also
people rely on.
people, if there's people that you like that you want to be featured on their newsletters as well, people will sometimes also take a fee. Like they'll say, yeah, I'll feature you for X amount of money, or yeah, just have to like I guess like do the research as to like if it's a good fit or not, you know. Things like that. But yeah, there are definitely other ways. I guess like having an event, you need to have people on your list to, or you have to know people to show up, right? But you could maybe be have a booth at someone else's event, right? You could sign up to be at an event speaking there or things like that.
Or partner with other local businesses to get the word out about your event. You know, like I, in the beginning, we used to, before social media was even like super, super big, I mean, we threw, that was like our thing. We threw events all the time. And I would go to all the downtown coffee shops and put up flyers. Like it's just that grassroots work that really builds real connection. And I'm not saying you need to go put up flyers now. I get it. It's 2025, but like, there, you know, think outside of social media a bit. And a lot of bigger organizations are really willing to like rep what you're working on, you know, like even if it's an event, or like share with their lists or to promote it. I mean, all you got to do is ask. Sometimes people just forget to ask.
Yeah, you have to ask it. And I think also like if you have a budget, like, and if you have someone who knows what they're doing, Facebook ads, even though, like, I don't like Facebook, but Facebook ads can be, if you're very specific, if there's a specific thing that you need, can also be like, you know, beneficial, like, you know, to get like the first few people in. But you have to be strategic. It has to be the right, but you can't just spend money and get people signed up and then they're actually not interested in what you have, right? So there's like, you know, there are things like that too, right? So yeah, there's loads of different way. Google Ads, I've never tried Google Ads, but yeah, Google Ads. Yeah, you know, if you don't know anyone, for example, if you want to have to start out, you know, that's one place to start as well. So yeah, let me just check here. So yeah, we've got that. Okay, so Amanda, first of all, thank you so much for your time and for
My
sharing all of
pleasure.
this, and yeah, and being game for like the back and forth and stuff. So I'm gonna ask you the two final questions that I ask everybody.
Okay.
And I have actually pulled out what you answered the last time, which I can tell you if you want to or not after you've
Yeah,
answered,
let's hear it.
right?
I don't know
But
what I said.
so I'll ask you first the question and then I'll tell you what you said. So the first question is, so there are two. The first one is, what life lesson do you wish you'd learned sooner?
You want my answer now before I get to hear the old one?
Oh yeah, you don't get to hear it before you say
Okay.
it.
What life lesson I wish I learned sooner? I wish that I. It's such a difficult thing for me to answer because I really feel like you learn things when you need to learn them, and I've learned to be open to that type of learning that comes. But one thing I think that would have been beneficial sooner is to be easier on myself about how I think I might be being perceived. I mean, I think this is such a common thing people struggle with, but that what I've learned is that one, you're always wrong, and two, people aren't wasting their time thinking about you. And knowing those two things helps me not worry at all about what other people are thinking, which as an entrepreneur can become overwhelming.
Is so are you saying that to not worry about what people are thinking, because you said one, you said they're wrong. Are they wrong about their perception of you, or you're wrong about how they perceive you?
No, I'm wrong. I'm wrong about what they're thinking. There's a lot of audacity for me to assume what somebody else thinks about me, and I'm wrong about it because that's all colored by what I think about me. And so if I'm thinking somebody's thinking something bad about me, that's my own, that's me. That's something that shows up for me that I need to deal with. And I think as a younger version of myself, I would just stress. Whereas now I don't think, oh, that person thinks that about me. I think, oh, what do I think about me that's coming up that I need to maybe deal with?
That's a very mature way of looking at it. It's always like it's true. It's often a reflection of how we feel about ourselves. It's like a mirror. And what was the second thing you said on that was, because then I may have misunderstood it. The second, so one that they're wrong, or
One that
you were.
they're yeah, one that they're wrong. Oh, and that they're not spending their time thinking about you.
That's so true. People never think of, everyone was just thinking about themselves and their lives.
Yeah, it's so egotistical for me to think that we're going to walk away from this conversation and you're going to spend your time thinking about me later. Like they're not thinking about you,
No,
you're thinking about you.
I will actually, because I do actually often like think about what I've with the what I've talked about with the guests. So do you want to hear what you said about that last time?
Yeah, sure.
So last time, so just to clarify that the question I, because I changed the question since, but it's sort of similar meaning. But the how I'd phrased it before was, what do you wish you'd known or learned at 18? And so you said, I wish I'd known what I'm capable of. I wish I'd known how to believe in myself, how to start doing the things that I wanted for the future me right then. I spent a lot of time in my younger years and in my adult years just working towards things and thinking like, I'll get there, I'll get there, I'll get there. And really, it was just a way for me to procrastinate and put off the things that I wanted in life because I hadn't yet grappled with a lot of those limiting beliefs we were talking about earlier. And I put my focus on a lot of places that I didn't need to be. So I just wish at 18 I had known that I was powerful, that I was talented, that I had to say that what I had to say had meaning for other people, and that I could start doing those things right then. I didn't need anything else or anybody else to give me that permission that I felt like I needed.
Thanks for sharing that with me. That feels nice to hear. I
It's
yeah. Yeah. I feel like I've dealt with that version of myself a bit since then, so that feels like yeah, it feels good to hear.
yeah, you can look back at her with love, right? And so the second question is, what's something you no longer put up with?
People saying no to ideas and not valuing my worth in business. There are so many young entrepreneurs, I was one of them, who I tell everybody, put a price tag on what you're offering and then add 20%, because you're definitely not valuing yourself enough, I'm sure of it. So I've definitely come to a place where I know what my worth and my value is and what I offer, and so I don't put up with devaluing it anymore or when other people try to negotiate it with me. And being told
Definitely
no
not.
to, yeah, being told no to creative ideas, like people who try to tell you like, oh, that idea is nuts, or why would you, no, you're not the right person for me, unless you're saying why not, we can't be around each other.
Well, let me make sure I don't introduce you to that particular person at work who's always just shitting on everybody's ideas. There's
Oh,
actually there's two of them.
no, thank you.
I know. So do you want to hear what you said last time?
Yes, please.
So what's something you no longer put up with? 2021 version. Awful people we just talked about. So obviously I don't remember what it was that we the type of people we talked about in the episode, but and then you said, yeah, so I think if there's any entrepreneurs listening, they'll understand exactly what I'm saying. I spent a lot of the beginning years of my business thinking that I needed to work around the clock and that I needed to be here 100% of the time to ever be successful. And I really m worked myself to death for many, many years. And now I don't put up with that shit from And now I don't put up with that shit from myself.
Yeah, same. Definitely.
You did mention this as well a little bit at the beginning about how you burnt out by not actually being there for you, really. So always working for others in the business, working on the business, and then actually sustaining yourself with your own creative energy, right?
Well, it's so interesting to think about that, because it's like at one point you work too much and then you stop working as much and you leave time for yourself, but then you're not spending that time on yourself. So it's been a progressive thing. So maybe we're finally arrived.
Yeah, it's all learning, right? So before you tell us where we can find you, work with you, and so on, is there anything else that you'd like to share with us that I may not have given you the opportunity to, or may have interrupted you, or anything like that?
No, I think no, this was great, and I think at the end of it all, I really just want small business owners to feel empowered by their ideas. I don't want them to feel like they have to fit into anybody else's perception of what those ideas should look like, because I really want to see more authentic ideas. Like, I want to know what people are passionate about, what they have knowledge about. Like, I want to learn from other people, and I want to participate in their creativity. And the way that we force people to feel like they have to present it in a certain way to us to make it palatable really limits my ability to see them. It limits all of our ability to see them. So, you know, the purpose in my message here is just that I just hope that entrepreneurs and small business owners, or people thinking about starting a small business or some any kind of venture whatsoever, spends their time reveling in the creative beauty of it, in the satisfaction they get from it, and not in what they think it needs to be.
Yeah. Keep it simple and keep yourself free.
Yes, like I love that.
Yeah, I always say that to people, specifically about podcasts. That's the bit that, you know, that I know I'm passionate about and things. But I always say, people worry about, oh, you know, should it be? Like with the video, you know, if you want to do video, do it. But like, it's not a should. But it's your podcast, or let's say your creativity, your creative venture, your house, your rules. That's it. Like, you just have to know about the legalese and, you know, the certain things you can do, you know, that's it. Like, you know, like maybe like the audio levels. There's certain things that you have to know to you know, to not get in trouble and make it pleasant for people's ears. But other than that, your house, your rules, mate. Yeah.
Absolutely. I love, I'm going to start saying that to myself. Keep it simple. Keep yourself free.
I may make a mug of that. Keep yourself free. Yeah. But yeah, it's, I think it's important. Thank you so much, Amanda, for coming back. A real, real pleasure having you on. And yeah, until next time, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And that's our episode. If you enjoyed it, please share it with a friend. It can be a screenshot that you text them, a link, the name of it. Any of those will do. If you give a 5-star rating and a review, that really, really helps the algorithm for it to be shared on all the different platforms. And just a little note, please be aware that this podcast is always free to listen to. Any platforms that want to charge you for it are doing so without my consent, okay? This is free. You can listen to it on Apple, Spotify, all of the other regular listening platforms that don't charge you. This is free. So don't let someone charge you to listen to my podcast. Until next time.
Use in health, inappropriately.